And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, let's get cooking here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. As we have real practice today. Yesterday was just a walkthrough for the Bills, but they're on the field. Installs going on. And a little bit more running around hitting today at practice. Although this time of year, guys rarely even have the pads on. It's usually shells at the most with helmets.
Nobody hits anyway. The pads are for literally, I guess they always are, but pads are for protection and making sure they feel right and they get they stay
used to.
Not to
be cracking on each other.
Yeah, nobody's hitting.
They're wrapping up donuts. You know those giant donuts they roll across the field now for the linebackers?
That's right.
I love that thing.
Yeah.
I'd be all over that. Who wouldn't want to do that?
I'd say
you
this.
Roll a donut across like a giant padded donut.
An NFL practice field has turned into quite the kids' playground these days.
I'm telling you.
With all the funky pads and the hoops and the stand-up dummies they have.
It's like a five-foot-high donut, and they just roll that thing out
the thing
there
with
and
the,
help the guys
spring
wrap
arms,
up.
You can run through the spring arms and stuff and,
oh, yeah.
And the nets to throw it into, see if you can hit it the right. It's pretty cool. Quite the adult playground.
A lot of gear, man. You need a lot of stuff
you know,
to get
they
through
do
a football
that
practice.
Happened over the course of many, many years. It evolved that because
it used to just be the sled and a couple other things.
And each other. I mean, you used to bang into you know, like you'd have guys. All right, all you guys, you stand two lines, face me, a yard apart. You run between them, and everybody take their inside arm and try and rip the ball out. You know, they used to be the tackling dummy and the apparatus. Now they get the apparatus, and everybody takes part.
It's kind of like the movies. You used to need like 100 people for a crowd shot. Now you just use CGI.
That's right. It's exactly the same thing.
Now they just have equipment instead
of people. It is exactly the same. Pretty soon it'll be CGI football.
Oh, don't say that. I don't know how that would go over.
No,
something tells me it'd be missing something.
Plus, two, the money's starting to show.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
They do make They do make some money off this thing. So they spend it.
Well, yeah. And equipment staffs have increased because you need more people moving that stuff around.
Right.
During practice.
It has grown, and I don't want to say leaps and bounds, but a steady pace, slow and steady, and it has grown, you know, it's prosperous. So back in the day, I mean, think about this. I came into the league with guy at halftime, you're coming in, you're in a folding chair, and you got maybe
8 minutes.
Two handfuls of guys. No, it's longer than it's like 15 minutes then. Oh. They cut it down with it. But you'd have like two handfuls of guys. Smoking. They go. There's always a group of them. They go in the locker. They go in the shower or whatever. They go in and burn a couple of lung darts. And you know, okay, let's go back.
Hit a couple of heaters.
Right. I came into the league like that.
Oh my god.
And you know, there's like two guys on the training. Two on the training staff. A head guy and an assistant. There was two guys in the equipment room. A head guy and an assistant. It was a small family.
Yeah.
Now, seriously, it's an army.
Yeah, it is.
It is an army. It's unbelievable how many. And I'm talking full-time, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Part of it's a big family.
I mean,
there
are a slew of interns, too. But, you know, they're getting paid also. So.
Well, the interns, I mean, it's like the Persian army in training camp. They got 15 ball boys. They got 12 equipment guys.
Yeah.
They got 20 medical interns. They got 15 full-time medical guys. They got 6-7 doctors that are there every day, 27 coaches, 85 players,
mm-hmm.
15 scouts are in the building. The pro personnel staff is in the building. It's PR with their half dozen, 10 people and their interns. It's unbelievable.
It's something else.
And you know how we see it and how we notice it? Because they got donuts now on the practice field. Everybody's got
something. Big 5-foot-tall donuts.
It's
roll it out there. Let's work on wrapping up.
They got those dummies now. And I'm talking about like dummies, not people dummies.
Yeah.
They got dummies now that like move. They
the robotic
guys. Like they roll around so the quarterback can, you know, and get the move of the. Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's pretty brilliant. Because it used to, you know, football is one of those games. You got to have a bunch of guys to play. You got to have a bunch of guys to
practice.
Practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You solve that equation.
Pretty amazing, though.
And on we go.
And here they are. And that, all that from just their walking through today.
No, they're practicing. They're practicing. More of a real practice today. And, you know, we'll pass along the injury report as it comes out as
How many guys on the COVID list today, Brownie?
Zero.
None.
So in Bills news and notes today, Cody Ford and Cam Lewis, the last two players on the reserve COVID list, taken off of that list today, just about an hour ago. So the Bills currently, and Quentin Morris, the practice squad tight end, who was the only practice squad player on the COVID list, was also removed. So now there isn't a single player, and everybody knock on wood here, because we still have to get to Sunday. Okay, knock on wood. There isn't a single player on the Bills roster or practice squad that has a COVID reserve designation. Now, I think we all are wise enough to know that it's been facilitated by the new COVID reserve rules, which allows players that are asymptomatic to get back on the field faster.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, that they're not in this building except for practice. All their meetings are virtual. All their get-togethers are via computer screen. Yeah. And the only time they come into practice is to practice. That's the only time they're in the building. They show up, and
practice,
maybe they'll have – I guess they can only have 15. They got this new gazillion dollar facility here, the training facility. Yeah. There's only 15 guys at a time in there.
Yep. Got to space them out.
Yeah, because they got to stay spread out.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they had a few windows open, too. Just keep the air moving through.
They're not, because I'll say this. As tedious as the protocols are, wearing a mask, you got to stay socially distanced, you got to, as tedious as all that is, the Bills are doing that. They're neck deep in those protocols.
Well, they better. You're going to end up like the Rams or the Browns or one of those
other Saints.
Teams that got crushed.
The Saints. I mean, they look like
Saints
a football
Saints are getting
team.
People back now, though. They got Taysom Hill and Trevor Siemian back, the two quarterbacks. Right. So that's good for them. We'll see how that helps because they've been through it, too. Something fierce.
Yeah, they're
Jets are getting hit now. Because the COVID rates in the New York metropolitan area are through the roof.
Yeah.
And, in a high population density area like that, good luck keeping the percentages down.
Right.
Not that we're doing much better here in Erie County. I think the infection rate's up to 19%.
It's like one in five people.
It's nuts. So we'll have to see where it goes. So cross your fingers and toes that the Bills can get to the end of the week without any new players going on COVID reserve. And they can enter this game, as healthy and as COVID-free as possible. But with the – and one other move, the Bills released running back Antonio Williams from the practice squad. I know he was a player who would be mentioned every now and then by some of our callers saying, hey, might want to give this guy a crack.
Right.
He's no longer with the team.
That's interesting because just as it looks as though in the last two or three weeks, Devin Singletary has become the lead guy, Antonio Williams is now gone.
Whether they're connected, we'll never know.
Yeah, who knows? But during their struggles, during that stretch of 2 months during the middle of the season where they're going win-loss, we were getting calls about
Antonio. Hey, why about giving that guy a shot?
Because we remember what happened to him last year in this same week 17 of last year. He killed it.
Yeah, he and Isaiah McKenzie lit it up.
Yeah, and Isaiah McKenzie. And there'll be people say, well, if Isaiah McKenzie's still lighting it up, let's give this guy a shot.
It's funny you mention that, Steve, because that is our very topic for today's show. Now that you've got basically the receiver contingent in full, at least right now, available for Sunday's game, how would you divvy up the wide receiver snaps if you were head coach Sean McDermott on Sunday? It's a good problem to have, but it's a problem nonetheless. There's only one football to go around, number one, but how do you divide up the playing time? Because Isaiah McKenzie became only the second person on this roster this season to have more than 10 catches in a game. Cole Beasley was the other guy. Did it against Washington back in week 3. Nobody had done it since, until McKenzie last week against the Patriots. Have fun sorting that out. I mean, you got a guy who's hot, and we've heard Coach McDermott and Brian Daboll say this before with respect to the running game. We're going to stick with the hot hand. They've been true to their word on that. Singletary's been getting the bulk of the work.
Yeah.
Does that apply also to wide receiver, or is it just a totally different position with different rules and whatever?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know how they're going to – I don't know how they'll handle that, because we've seen it on the offensive line even. They go in there and they start to click. Last year, Mitch Morse was healthy that 1 week, and they said, no, you know what, we're going to go with another week with Feliciano at center, see how that goes, because we're starting to play pretty well. And last year, you know, they were steamrolling people. We've seen it at other positions, so we'll see if Isaiah McKenzie and can come out and do it. Now, you know, Cole Beasley just getting back in the fold. Maybe they're going to give him a chance to catch his feet or catch his breath. He's also 30 years old. Sanders is 34 years old. Then you've got Gabe Davis and Isaiah McKenzie sitting behind him with, you know, this quote-unquote fresh legs kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let those old guys sit for a minute and rest.
I mean, Diggs aside from doing what Diggs typically does, the two hottest receivers on the roster right now in terms of recent production are McKenzie and Davis.
Yes.
I mean, there's no debating that.
Yes.
Now, I'll be the first to say every week is different with respect to game plan and who you want to utilize and the matchups that you like and maybe don't like as much. But it's hard to ignore the production from those two.
Here's the thing, too, that I don't want to become a prisoner of the moment where just because it's working right this minute, let's just go with this all the time. Because here's what think about this, though. You've heard it in through all the media, people looking at this team, watching this team, and they've been talking about what happened at halftime of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game where this team all of a sudden went from 24-3 to 27-27. And they just flipped the script on the defending world champions. And since that time, even though they lost that game in overtime, they go the next week in Carolina and lump those guys up. They go to New England and never punt and never get sacked, never turn the ball over and win there by double digits. It kind of coincides with Gabe Davis, Isaiah McKenzie getting on the field. Is there a cause and effect? I don't know, but I hope that the coaching staff has a handle on, you know, if it is, okay, fine, go with it. If it's not, don't just bow to being a prisoner of the moment, say, yeah, let's just do it. But something's different. Over the last 2.5 games, this team has turned a corner, and I don't know if you don't try and keep that thing rolling like that.
Yeah, and the question becomes, how do you balance that? How do you balance that at wide receiver? Because you got to understand, too, there's an amount of pride here at stake also. I mean, Cole Beasley is a very prideful player. He's coming off a career season last year. I mean, it's not like this guy's production just dried up and disappeared. He's been relatively productive this year. But, yeah, I agree with you, Steve. The offense has taken a noticeable step forward from where it had been through the doldrums of that 8-week stretch where they were winning 1 week and losing the next week, and they were up and down, and part of the problem was the offensive shortcomings. Lacking consistency, however you want to describe it. And now, since you've caught fire, Gabe Davis has gotten significantly more snaps due to an injury primarily to Emmanuel Sanders before missing last week's game, being on the COVID reserve list. And Isaiah McKenzie stepped into the breach last week with Beasley down on the COVID reserve list and showed out.
Yeah.
I mean, he was unstoppable. They had no answer for him. And I realized the next week might be different. But I don't know how you ignore that to a point where you say, well, you know what, you're just going to sit down again because Beasley's back. You don't rotate him in, like, even a little? I don't know. Like, this is...
I think this, too. I think you start to... let's not lose sight of this. You got to win this game.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You've got to win this game.
You still have to win games here. You've got to
win
this
game. This isn't like lining up your pitching staff at the end of the regular season when you've already got everything wrapped up. This is got to win these games. Do not take any chances. Just trust that just trust your depth is going to take over and you'll get that next game. But you got to win this game. So give yourself the best chance to win this game. And if it means Isaiah McKenzie and Gabe Davis, fine. If it means Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley, fine. If it means Beasley and Davis, fine. If it means Sanders and McKenzie, okay. I don't have any skin in this game. Just win.
Yeah.
Just win. And I trust that McDermott and Daboll and even Josh will have something to say about what he wants to do against the particular defense they're facing this week.
Yeah.
And it may be that they have enough confidence to say, you know what? We're probably not going to long-term go with this combination, but we can win with this combination this week. Let's do this, because then the Jets and then somebody else, they're going to have to start preparing for that combination, which we have no intention of running later on. You right. get into the analytics part of all of this, and there's something to be said for that. If you have confidence, you can win it doing that.
Yeah, to me, I think there's also a decision to be made here. As while you do need to win these games, you also need to get players who have been out of the lineup ready. Logic would say you're going to be counting on Cole Beasley, and you're going to be counting on Gabriel Davis to make plays for you come the postseason. After missing a week, you want to, there's an exercise to be had there too, getting them back up to speed, getting them back in the fray, used to the reestablishing the timing in the passing game. These are things that are on the to-do list as well. Winning is number one, but there's a checklist right behind that that they have to consider as well. Hey, we got to get Cole ramped up for the playoffs. Yes, he's a veteran. He'll probably step right back in. It'll be like riding a bike, whatever. But he missed a game. And, you know, let's get him back up to speed. Let's get him back to game speed, you know, whatever the case might be. I just wonder down the stretch here, especially considering what happened late last season, Steve. Okay? And this is what happened late last season. Because they ran Diggs and Beasley into the ground last year with all the routes they ran, all the right. throwing they did. Right. And what happened? Diggs had an oblique strain, wasn't quite the same in the right. playoffs. Cole Beasley had a cracked bone in his leg.
That's true.
Missed a game, then played through it in the playoffs. Yeah. But I think we can all agree he wasn't the same.
I forgot
so
about that.
I think there is a method by which you can get those guys their reps, but not overtax them in these last 2 weeks. Yes, you need the games. Yes, you have to win, but are you really losing anything if you insert Isaiah McKenzie in and say, Beasley, we're going to take 10 to 12% of the reps away from you this week. We're saving you for the playoffs. You'll get your reps. You'll get your targets, whatever, but you're not going to play quite as much as you did in week 7, 8, 9 because we want to save you for the playoffs. Remember what happened last year.
Right.
I think you could get him to buy into that for these next couple of weeks.
Sure, I think all those guys would buy into it. Even Isaiah McKenzie say, "Listen, we want you to be 100% for the playoffs because we might have some things up our sleeve. We may go a little bit more four wide in the playoffs, or we might throw you out there in certain situations instead of Sanders with Cole Beasley, that kind of thing." Yeah, all these guys will buy into it. You get into the playoffs, guys will absolutely do it. You know, Isaiah McKenzie would play offensive guard if you wanted him to in the playoffs. They're all in for that. So it comes down to just black and white. Is this a better idea for us going forward, or is that a better idea? These guys will, particularly at this level, they're going to say, yeah, you know what? You want me to sit for 2 weeks? Cole Beasley will say, fine, I'll do it, knowing what your plan is. No problem. You want me to play every single snap? I'm fine with that too. These guys know.
I don't know if he'd be fine with sitting down.
No, he wouldn't like it. But if he knows he's going to get in the playoff game and they're going to target him 15 times, and it's for a reason, good. And I think a lot of this too has to do with where are these guys at right now. And Cole's been sitting at probably Cole Beasley's been sitting at home for 2 weeks now, and he's like, you know, you get a little antsy to play.
Yeah.
Maybe for the first 3 or 4 days of it, he's like, oh, man, it feels good to not have to go out there and run. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
If these guys hit the postseason fresh as a daisy, that's hard to match up with. You jump out of that tunnel on the wild card weekend and you're fresh and that other team had to fight and claw and scratch to get in, you got them.
Yeah. You know?
That's where you want to be. And that's where they're trying. I think that's what they're juggling right now is rest, freshness, and some tactics.
Sharpness.
Yeah, tactics as well. They don't want somebody to show up like Beasley. You know, they don't want him not to miss 3 games before he plays his next game.
That's unrealistic because he's going to look awfully rusty in the playoffs.
Yeah, so I think all of that stuff's in the mix. And I think the thing that we don't know is that day-to-day, you know, like for instance – Isaiah Hodges shows up today and he's got the flu. Okay, so McKenzie, you got to take his reps on the scout team, and now you're gonna you know, you got all this juggling to do because you only got so many guys to bodies to work with. And you got to get ready, and you got to get everybody else ready as well. How guys feel day to day says a little bit about what the coaching staff thinks. Everything's on the table, and there's a million moving parts, and you're trying to get that million moving parts to work like a finely tuned, intricate machine. And it's hard to do.
What would you do if you're Coach McDermott this week or somebody on the offensive staff? How do you divvy up the reps between guys like Emmanuel Sanders and Gabriel Davis, Cole Beasley and Isaiah McKenzie in light of the recent play of Davis and McKenzie? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Because I don't know that there's an easy answer here. As we said, it's a good problem to have because you're flush with talent to utilize. But how do you put each of those players into action and deploy them within the scope of your passing game and do it in such a way where somebody doesn't feel shortchanged, somebody doesn't feel like their playing time's getting eaten into by somebody else? Because I think we all know, too, the wide receiver room can be a little moody sometimes. I'm choosing my words carefully here.
It can turn into a cat.
Guys want the ball.
It can turn into a cat fight.
So I just think it's a tricky thing to navigate. It's a good dilemma, as we said, but I just don't know how you ignore production, especially when Coach McDermott preaches you got to earn everything. You know what I mean? You got to earn the right to play, earn the right to win, all of those things. I don't know how that doesn't apply here.
Well, it may apply. Here's the thing, and here's what happens. In my opinion, you feel like you see a guy get rewarded for what he did. Like, say, for instance, Gabe Davis or whatever, and Isaiah McKenzie, who was benched, and then he's back in, and now he's the centerpiece of the offense, all that stuff. Cole Beasley, who was up and down, you know, some weeks he has 10 targets, some weeks he gets 4 targets, that kind of stuff. You see these guys go up and down, and you're watching as a wide receiver, guys like Isaiah Hodgins and Marquez Stevenson has been watching. Marquez gets elevated and stuff. He does something, he gets elevated. Or whatever happens ahead of him causes him to be elevated by just because he's the next guy up. If you're down there working, and you're working really hard, and you don't get rewarded, it's almost like sabotage, self-sabotage.
Well, but that, and that's my point with somebody like McKenzie.
Yeah.
Like, the two times you've given him a starting opportunity,
he's crushed it.
He's crushed it. How do you ignore that?
Week
I don't know how you ignore
year,
that.
He won the game last year, week 17. He won it.
He had 2 touchdowns.
3.
The return touchdown, too.
3. So he won that game last year. He comes in this year, has 11 catches on 12 targets. And it's like, okay, well, you know. And then, but, you know, you've also got guys like Emmanuel Sanders. You know, guys like that. And it's just, you know, we're talking about the wide receivers. There's a lot of guys out there like this. But it's... I think when you get this deep into the season, most, and I know this for a fact, McKenzie, Diggs, Beasley, Davis, they all love each other. They absolutely love each other. They do anything for it. And they hope for each other's success because they know they're all, it's going to rise the entire boat. The rising water raises all boats. We're all going to get uplifted by that if you have success. So they're all in it with each other. It comes down to the coaching staff coming up with different ways to win games, keep these guys sharp, and third, try and keep them highly inspired and motivated to play even better. That's hard because there's, you know, like we say, you can only put 11 guys on the field, and there's just a limited roster.
Yeah.
It's the way it is.
I'd have a hard time not playing McKenzie. I don't want to disrespect Beasley and what he's done here the better part of the last 2-plus seasons because he's been extraordinarily productive. If I'm coaching, I got to find a way to put McKenzie on the field. Even if it's just a package of plays, I got to put him out there. He's too much of a mismatch to not put him out there.
Right.
He might be the fastest guy on the field.
Right.
I mean, the separation, I mean, Miles Bryant could not cover him. I was watching the mic'd up that our video team did here at BuffaloBills.com. They had Levi Wallace mic'd up for last week's game against New England. If you haven't seen it, go check it out at BuffaloBills.com. And he's sitting on the bench with Taron Johnson. He goes, they're still playing man on him. They can't cover him in man coverage. They can't cover him. Like, he's watching this happen.
Yeah.
And they had no answer. I like guys that defenses don't have an answer for. And, you know, maybe Atlanta has a better answer, but their defensive rankings wouldn't indicate that.
Yep.
They're not doing too well.
And we just, you know, we just got this little note from our guy, Jeff Koltunak, Falcons defensive coordinator Dean Pease. They asked him, how do you stop Josh Allen? And he says, don't let him off the bus. You know, the word's out. This is a tough – this offense is a handful. And at some point in the next month or so, next few weeks or so, this team is going to have to figure out how to get around teams like Tennessee and Kansas City, Cincinnati, the Patriots again perhaps, and the Colts again.
Yeah.
You're going to have to start coming up with a way – to play better than you did the first time around for a lot of those teams and or continue to play well against them when they've transformed themselves like you did at halftime of the Tampa Bay game. It's going to come down to a one-game season pretty quick here. And you've got this guy in Josh Allen, and I was thinking about this today, Brownie, and see what you think. You see all these teams play like Aaron Rodgers. It's been Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers forever, for 16 years. And you think, well, why haven't they gotten back to a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Why haven't they been able to? I think it's because it's Aaron Rodgers and a bunch of guys. And I like Devontae Adams, but let me tell you something. Devontae Adams on the Houston Texans, you don't know who the heck he is.
Mm.
You've never heard of him.
Really?
Never heard of him.
He's pretty good.
Absolutely.
He's
really good. You put him on a team. You put him on.
You don't think he can do what Brandon Cooks is doing in Houston right now?
You don't think what would happen if Devontae Adams was on the New Orleans Saints roster right now? It wouldn't even be a blip on the radar.
Okay.
All I'm saying is this. Yeah. My point is this. Aaron Rodgers, the others on Aaron Rodgers' team have never gotten, they've gotten the NFC Championship game time and time and time again. It's the others that are the difference makers. It's the other guys on the roster. It's the other guys for the New England Patriots when they had Brady. It was the other guys that elevated them, the way they ran their system. With the Julian Edelmans and the Gronkowskis.
Yeah.
You look at all these other teams that have won it in recent years. Even when Peyton Manning was there, it was Marvin Harrison and the running back.
Yeah.
You know, they've had some guys. Who's going to be that here? Who's that guy in Buffalo? In Kansas City, it's Kelce and Tyreek. Now, Mahomes is the guy, but they've got others.
Well, they got others here, too, which is... And we're trying to figure out who to put on the field. 803.
Is that like a quarterback controversy? If you got two quarterbacks you want to play, you
no,
don't have
No, it's different
anyone?
At the other positions. I don't think it's the same thing. Let's go to the phones and see what you think at 803-0550. We go to Andy in Buffalo here first. What do you got for us, Andy?
Hey, listen. I understand you. The coach. He's got a bad decision to make. But you got to play with your head, not with your heart. McKenzie is the man. He is definitely the man to play. I said, Beasley's good for your 5-10 yarders sometimes, but, man, McKenzie's been showing his stuff. He is
the man. So you'd go with him, Andy?
I would go with McKenzie all the way. I'm just wondering, does McDermott ever talk to Allen and ask him, what do you think? I mean, they're a tight-knit group.
Yeah, Andy. They talk 50 times a day about this exact subject.
Yeah.
They don't – that
do you,
conversation
like,
never stops.
Yeah, Dable's going to assess –
Dable's that way.
He's going to assess his matchups and make his plans accordingly, but he's going to consult Josh on and say, hey, I like so-and-so in this matchup. Do you feel the same?
They talk about it on the practice field when the guy's doing it. He'll talk about that. He'll talk about, hey, Beasley, he can do this and this and this. And then when they come out and it's – and it's McKenzie. They go, well, Mike McKenzie do this and this because he does that and that and that. Then you go in, you're watching it on film, and you say, like like right here, I like McKenzie right here. They talk about this constantly.
How'd you like the look of that play that we ran, you know, with Beasley in practice? Did that feel good to you?
And
did
I remember this. I remember Frank Reich talking to me one time, and he goes, listen, he goes, I like this better out of three strong. The same play out of three strong, because then I got, you know, I got Carwell Gardner running the corner rather than, you know, the offensive lineman running it, right? He goes, they think about these plays even with different combinations and out of different formations. Let's run this play out of three tight ends and two backs instead of five wide. I like it out of five wide, but let's run it out of tight, heavy format. And they're like, hey, that's a great, you know, these are the kind of conversations they have. And that's a little hyperbole. But you get the idea. I want it out of this personnel combination and this formation rather than these people and that formation.
Yeah.
It's another level of offense that a lot of, you know, even media analysts never can get to because they don't know the options. Right. They don't know the limitations.
Break time for us here, because when we come back, we're going to be joined by ESPN NFL insider Field Yates, also a fantasy football expert. He's going to be giving us his ultimate fantasy lineup. Presented by FanDuel. That's coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Lord Almighty, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. There is a show of shows that happens off the air. It's a shame we can't bring it to you. It's chock full of goodness. But we got something else that's chock full of goodness. The Ultimate Fantasy Lineup, presented by Field Yates, ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football guru. Field, I'm proud of myself. I'm in the final this year. I'm a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. But fingers and toes crossed here. We'll see how it pans out. We'll let you know next week. But I got a good look at it this week. We'll see what happens.
Let me just say it this way. I hope you choke and die.
Wow.
Come on, Steve.
I don't want to hear it.
Not holding back on Brownie.
Nah, he's kidding. He'll probably win it.
I don't know.
I don't care.
It's not even in our little friendly control room league here where Steve and I flamed out in fiery and horrific fashion.
I flamed out in September.
Oh, man.
We didn't do too well here.
Let me ask you quickly, before we get into the daily fantasy lineup, who do you need in your season-long lineup to really come through for you?
I have a strong lineup, which is surprising considering the 14-team league that I am in, because it gets really thin really fast. But I made a couple of picks on down-the-road projection kind of looks. Like, I waited a long time on quarterback, but I got Burrow in, like, the 9th or 10th round, and he was my number one QB. And he panned out for me. You know, a little bit of a slow start, but he panned out well for me. Damian Harris kind of helped me at the right times this year. Chubb, you know, Davante Adams. I put together a pretty good roster, but I did it with some bit of projection to it. CeeDee Lamb. So I had the 6th pick in the draft. I thought I did pretty well.
Love it. That's awesome to hear. I'm happy for you and very much looking forward to seeing how things go this upcoming weekend, and I'm looking forward to a Joe Burrow 9 touchdown game.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that would work for me. I'd be happy with that.
So we're talking about your ultimate fantasy lineup, and I got to tell you, once in a while, it hasn't happened much, but once in a while, you've had a lineup where I get it. I mean, I'm all about the Bills here in Western New York, and I kind of focus on them. You got Matthew Stafford as your quarterback, $7,600. That seems like a bargain. We'll get to the guy. I had to look up one of your players. I just got to admit it. I had to look up one of your running backs. I didn't know who he was.
Okay. I love it. That's great. Okay. So Matthew Stafford is the quarterback at $7,600. And Matthew Stafford plays the Ravens on Sunday. Now, people are probably going to note that Matthew Stafford did not play well this past week when they were playing against the Vikings. But I don't foresee him having back-to-back bad games. And, you know, Brownie was just talking about how he needs Joe Burrow to go off this weekend. Well, what did Joe Burrow do this past weekend against the Baltimore Ravens?
Right.
He completely decimated them. That secondary has just taken such a hit this year. So many different injuries have impacted Baltimore, not just injuries, but also COVID list additions. The COVID additions the COVID list players are mostly thinned out by now, but I like Matthew Stafford, $7,600. Now, let's move to running backs, because I know Steve wants to know exactly who the heck it was that I picked to have in my lineup. So as always, there are two running backs, and we take a look at the two running backs. The first one is Boston Scott for the Philadelphia Eagles. Is that the one that you were wondering about?
He doesn't know him from a hole in his head.
Okay. Boston Scott, who sixth-round pick out of Louisiana Tech a few years back, a guy who has actually played a decent amount for Philly in spot duty earlier on this year, and we know that Miles Sanders is out for this week. We also know that Jordan Howard is banged up, suffered a stinger, and is unlikely to play, or at least questionable to play on Sunday. As a result of that, Boston Scott is the next man up. This Washington defense has been decimated due to injuries and also the COVID list. They have zero answers right now defensively. They have been bad defending the run. So Boston Scott makes my list, priced at just $6,000 this week for the Eagles.
Yeah.
Boston Additionally, at running back.
Shaking his head. Yeah, Javonte Williams is an easy play as I see it. He's been crushing it.
Right.
He's been really good. And, you know, the future is extremely bright for Javonte Williams. He's going to probably be the starter and a full-time player next year for the Denver Broncos. In the meantime, he's sharing duties with Melvin Gordon, an effective veteran in his own right. Javonte Williams, though, plays the Chargers on Sunday. The Chargers are about as bad of a run defense as you will find in the NFL right now. The Chargers allowed 41 points to the Houston Texans this past Sunday, including career day for Rex Burkhead, who had nearly 150 rushing yards, two touchdowns. He was fantastic. I think Javonte Williams and the Broncos, who, guys, they don't throw the football to their wide receivers at all. Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, and Tim Patrick are all highly compensated individuals just not to catch the ball. They're paid to block, apparently. The Broncos want to run it. They will do so with Javonte Williams on Sunday. Let's get to our wide receivers. And the first one probably is very, very obvious to many. It's Antonio Brown for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He is the only of the top three wideouts in Tampa that is currently available. Mike Evans is on the COVID list. And then Chris Godwin is out for the year due to an ACL tear. Antonio Brown played last week, and he had up over 10 catches. He now has more games with 10 catches than any player in the history of the NFL. Tom Brady looked to him frequently and frequently and frequently again. Tom Brady threw the ball 30 times last week. Half of those attempts went to Antonio Brown, just a ridiculous amount. They play the Jets on Sunday, obviously a very banged up and not talented defense right now because of those injuries. I like Antonio Brown, even at the price point of $8,500. And then we move forward to Jalen Waddle, a guy that you guys saw earlier this year on two separate occasions. The Bills beat the Dolphins both times. Talented player who's been really, really busy as of late. He's actually one of two rookies that I have in my lineup amongst wide receivers. Yeah. And I'll go ahead and reveal Amon-Ra St. Brown for a very specific reason. Is prior to this year, there had been just one rookie wide receiver, just one in the history of the league, to have eight or more catches in four straight games. That was Odell Beckham Jr. back in 2014. Jalen Waddle and Amon-Ra St. Brown priced at $7,000 and then $6,900 this week are each in the midst of a four-game streak of at least eight catches. FanDuel awards a point for each catch that you have. The more catches you have, the better your outlook is. These guys are feasting right now. It's not a ton of big plays, but that doesn't matter. You just need volume. The volume those two have is rare right now.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised at the tight end spot here. We know that the Texans did not have Brandon Cooks in the lineup last week, and a guy like Brevin Jordan had more opportunities with Davis Mills in there at QB. So are you still riding that, or what's the decision here?
Yeah, Brevin Jordan's kind of an interesting player, guys. He's a fifth-round pick out of Miami, a guy who has been a little bit of a revelation for the Texans this year. I got to tell you, I'm intrigued by what Houston's doing. The resources they had this offseason were basically none. They didn't have a first-round pick or a second-round pick. They didn't hardly spend top money in free agency. Basically, everything they did was bargain hunting, right? I mean, it was guys making somewhere between $1 and $3 million per season. Brevin Jordan's been a good little player for them, a rookie. And you mentioned that Brandon Cooks does come back, Brownie. I think, though, that there's enough volume for Brevin Jordan to continue to be a piece of that offense. Then Davis Mills, say whatever you want. I think it's pretty clear that Davis Mills has done just as much, if not more, than other rookie quarterbacks who were drafted in the first round. You know, Mac Jones has separated himself from the rest of the rookie class, but Other rookie quarterbacks have struggled, and all of a sudden Davis Mills looks pretty sharp. I think that Brevin Jordan should be a pretty useful play on Sunday, tight end spot.
Okay. And then we've seen this guy before in your lineup, and we totally understand why. Debo's doing it all for San Fran on offense.
Debo's doing it all. That's right. Debo Samuel, and they play the Texans. So this is a defense that was frisky last week, but a defense that I think, speaking general, you can have your way with. Debo Samuel is a really talented player. The 49ers leaned a little bit less on him as a runner last week, and he was more involved as a receiver again, which you'll take the yards no matter how you can get them. But if you can get the yards and the catches like you did last week with Debo Samuel, they'll pay off handsomely. We've been doing this now for 17 weeks, and you guys know my strategy. I want as much of my money invested into my top flight wide receivers as possible. As a result of that, Debo Samuel is in my flex spot. I would have normally had him in my wide receiver spot, but I wanted to make that note about Jalen Waddle and Amon-Ra St. Brown at the same time. So Debo slides down to my flex, $9,000, and a worthwhile investment at that.
And you finish it off with the defense of the Tennessee Titans against Miami. It's interesting, too, because we're getting to the point right now, Field, where you've got some teams that are going to be out of it and kind of done here in Week 17, Week 18. But this is a game both teams need. You're going to have two teams playing, doing their best to win. Tennessee trying to kind of hang in there for the number one seed on the outside shot that the Kansas City Chiefs stumble. So this is going to be a real battle against Miami for the Tennessee Titans, but this is a Titans defense that's played very well.
Yeah, the Titans defense has played well up front at the very least, and Miami, as we know, has won seven straight games, guys. And you know, winning seven games in the NFL, no matter who you're playing against, is pretty darn impressive. But they've done most of their damage on defense. It's been a much more defensive effort than it has been about the offense. They have virtually no running game. They have, other than Jalen Waddle, not a bunch of difference makers in the passing game. This offensive line has struggled all year long. Tennessee's strength on defense is their defensive line. They get Danico Autry back from the reserve COVID-19 list on Sunday. That'll make them whole. So I think there's a chance that this Titans defensive front can control this game. You're right, Steve. This is a really interesting last couple of weeks in both conferences, but in the AFC, no seeding has been decided or is even close to being decided. If the Chiefs can't hold up their end of the bargain on Sunday against the Bengals, the Titans have real life, because if the Titans win their final two games and Kansas City loses either this weekend or next, the Titans are the number one seed. There's a lot at stake. These past couple of years, it feels like we've had a team that's been a runaway in either conference. That is not the case right now in either the AFC or the NFC.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, that is Field Yates' ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. All right, well, we're unfortunately out of time here, Field. We got an interesting debate going on about receiver playing time with everybody back on the active roster now for the Bills. It's going to be interesting to see how this coaching staff divvies it up. Isaiah McKenzie lit it up. Gabriel Davis has been hot. Who's going to sit down? We don't know. It's going to be tricky.
Yeah. Really interesting, guys. And I think there are a lot of people that are wondering if they can start Gabriel Davis in fantasy this weekend. That being said, Cole Beasley's played a ton of snaps when he has been available for the Bills, and sounds like he'll be good to go on Sunday after being activated from the COVID-19 reserve list. It's a good problem for the Bills. It's a not so good problem for those of us that are trying to decipher who to start in fantasy.
That kind of makes hands off for the Bills roster, doesn't it? I mean, there's just no way to know which guy's going to get the targets.
Yeah, it's Josh. It's Dawson Knox. It's Stephon. It's Devin Singletary right now. And then beyond that, it's good luck.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Phil.
Thanks,
we appreciate
good
it.
Luck to you.
We'll catch
happy
up with
New
you next year. Week.
Talk
have
to you
happy
guys
New
next
year.
Week. Talk to you next year, guys. That's right.
That's right.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. That's Field Yates joining us here on One Bills Live with his ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. Break time for us, but back with your phone calls and your tweets. We'll see you in a second here on One Bills Live. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And motoring to the second hour, where we'll have one Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Famer, joining us for his weekly appearance. But we want to get to the phones here quickly, as we are asking you in today's Twitter conversation, how should the Bills divvy up the wide receiver snaps now that everybody is back on the active roster and ready to roll here? through these final two regular season games. We go to the phones, and we go to Dave in Florida. Dave, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
How you doing, fellas?
Good.
All right, listen, I'm just hoping that the Bills don't play down to the competition. I don't care who starts or who plays. They got to play like they've been the last 2 weeks. That's my one problem. They play down sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong, Dave. I think you can.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, what else
now,
you got?
I have one question for Steve Tasker.
Okay.
Steve, what is your resolution for 2022?
Ooh.
Thank you, fellas.
All right, thanks, Dave. Appreciate the call. You want to answer that one, Steve?
I haven't thought about it too much. I haven't thought about New Year's resolutions too much yet.
Smoke better cigars?
Yeah, you know what? I think
you've got a pretty good stash.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of plowing through them, though. It's been a long season. Yeah, might be an uptick in my cigar quality at the house.
I've got
to move my humidor out of my office because my office is too chilly and I can't keep the humidor at the right temperature. It's killing me.
Yeah, first world problems. Huh?
I know.
My at-home humidor just can't keep the humidity I'm striving for.
I'm sure it's a problem a lot of us have.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm not alone in that. I'm just
sure
saying.
Thing.
But here's the thing. I had to float that. I had to float that balloon out as to where I'm going to put the thing. Because, you know, for some reason, the missus
there's not enough room at the Tasker compound? Is that what we're trying to say?
The missus doesn't have that quite as high on her priority list of a good place to put the humidor as I do. So I'm a little limited in where I will be able to, you know.
Where, in the 7,500 square feet are we going to put that?
Well, it's not that big, but yeah, you get my problem.
And all right, let's talk about Dave's other issue, which was playing down to the level of your competition. The Bills have suffered at the hand of that very situation at times this year. And I was saying the other day, Steve, you could make the argument that the best start-to-finish games that the Bills have played this year, Kansas City in Week 6, probably the New England game last week, and maybe the Tennessee game. It didn't end the right way, but they played pretty well through that game for the most part.
Yeah.
Those might be the best three start-to-finish games. And when you think about it, you had an axe to grind with the Tennessee game.
Right.
There was inherent motivation in the Chiefs game, you know, slay the dragon kind of thing. And they were still sore about losing to the Patriots here 3 weeks ago. There was an inherent motivational quality to all three of those games. The question becomes, can they summon up that kind of energy, anger, and physicality to play that way every week the rest of the way?
I think they can. I think this is a different team than it was. Think about this. They lose to the Steelers in Week 1, and they're ticked, right? They go out, they beat the Miami Dolphins, who, as we're finding out, weren't quite the bad team we thought they were. They beat them 35-0. They come home to play Washington, and they absolutely obliterate Washington and score 43 points on those guys, 43-21. Washington gets two touchdowns because we turn it over in our own end.
Yeah.
All right, so they absolutely squash Washington. They come to Houston Texans, 40-0. It's a laugher. Then you go in and say, all right, now we're going to see what you guys are really made of, all right? 38-20 over the Chiefs. So then they're going to say, okay, here we go. Tennessee's is that team that beat us last year. They played really well against it, and they're a slip and fall on a quarterback sneak away from winning that game.
Okay.
And that's a – right? They beat Miami again. So they get into this, and all of a sudden they get into this stretch of the season where the Jaguars game is the absolute aberration of the entire season. You can't – there's no way around the fact that this offense did not show up in that game. They just didn't play well. The Indianapolis Colts came in here with the same chip on their shoulder that the Bills had against Kansas City. You get that. The Patriots come in here in 40-mile-an-hour wins, bad, and the Bills can't make a single play to win that game. Mm. They're still the same team, but my point is they got into a point, particularly early in the season, where they're hanging 40 on teams, 38, 43, 40, 35 in a four-game stretch. And they're thinking we can turn it on whenever
It all figured out.
And I think they got,
you can probably hear me now, right?
Yeah, I can hear you. And so I think they got there. I think we got to the point there where now they know it's an every week thing.
Yeah.
And I think they know where they can – the process is the process for a reason. And I think they got away from it.
Fair enough. Let's just hope now that they've started to stack wins that they realize that process has to remain intact no matter who the heck they're playing.
Dave's got a point, though.
It's a concern.
That is the fear for Bills fans.
Yeah, it's a concern. Because I don't think there's any question about it.
I think most people in this side of the aisle believe that when this team plays its best, they beat everybody.
Yeah.
They beat everybody.
And let's not forget, yeah, it's the Falcons and the Jets, but there's still work to do to clinch the division and to clinch a playoff berth. You need a win and a couple of teams to lose this week to get in, and then you need another win against the Jets to win the division. So the work is not done yet in the regular season. And I'm sure they're aware of that, and they're focused on that. Got to finish the job. Break time here for us when we return. The Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas, joining us next for hour number two here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Thursday. And you know what that means. It means we're joined by the Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas. And Thurm, I don't know if you're aware of this, but 30 years ago today, you were named NFL MVP. You remember that?
Wow.
30 years ago today.
Of course he remembers. What do you...
Well, what I mean by that is...
I remember that.
This is what I mean. What I mean is I'm sure that the guys found out in the locker room. You know, you come in from practice maybe. You find out. Do you remember what the locker room was like when, you know, one of your teammates wins MVP, Steve? Were people reveling in this or no?
I don't know how. Were we...
You don't remember.
Did Marv announce that? It was like quiet, right? I don't remember anything.
Well, I don't remember anything either, to be honest with you.
You guys make fun of me and nobody remembers.
It wasn't a deal, right?
What's that?
It was a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal. Like Marv didn't announce it and like, right?
No. Nah, you know, Marv wasn't really into big announcements or anything like that, so... you know, we just went about our everyday thing, and I think Scott Burstow got a hold of me and told me that I won MVP. But the only thing that I remember about that was that, you know, Jim Kelly coming up to me afterwards and said, you know what, I own half of that because I handed off you the ball and I threw the ball to you, so half of that trophy is mine, which
yeah,
I agree.
Close-knit group even then, right?
Yeah, but I do actually think – I remember, I think Jim actually finished second that year. So, I mean, obviously he had a great year also.
Yeah, we were pretty good. Or you were pretty good. I mean, I'm sorry. I had good seats.
Yeah. Yeah, just to let everybody know, 1,407 yards rushing, 631 yards receiving for a total of over 2,000 all-purpose yards, along with 12 touchdowns, 7 on the ground, 5 through the air.
You were in the midst of a 4-year run when you led the league every year in yards from scrimmage, correct?
Yeah.
And you were the only person since Jim Brown to do that.
Yeah.
And
I broke Jim Brown's record, who had the record of 3, and went on to pass that record and break it of 4. And then, you know, the 5th year was really kind of the one that I wanted, but, you know, I don't know what that year brought, but, you know, that year, man, Emmitt Smith missed 2 games and ended up beating me. That was the year that he held out. We went down to Dallas and beat him. And, you know, he held out 2 years to end up, you know, having a great year that year and missing 2 games and still gained more yards than I did. So, I mean, that's right there was a great accomplishment by Emmitt Smith. If that hadn't happened, you know, I would have made it 5 years. But, hey, 4 is enough for me.
Yeah, well, yeah, it didn't keep you from getting in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was awesome. So, and what do you think? We've been asking this question here about this team this year, and they're coming down the stretch. They're going to be in the playoffs, looks like, almost for sure. Probably win the division, too. But they got this problem that, well, I say it's a problem, but
Gabe Davis been playing really good. Isaiah McKenzie been playing really good. And Sanders and Cole Beasley. Sanders been hurt a little bit. Cole Beasley's been on the list. He's off. Now they got these guys that have the hot hand versus the guys who have been proven trustworthy and productive. How do you handle only having a – say, for instance, they only go three wide. How do you handle a rotation and giving guy rewarding guys for being productive and wanting to win the game first and foremost – and taking care of all these guys and giving them what they deserve, the kind of reps they deserve?
Well, I hope these guys know what's at stake here. And hopefully that will not be a problem in the locker room. I don't think it will be a problem because, first of all, like you said, you know, hey, the division is at stake. Playing a home game is at stake. And all those guys who are in that locker room now who, like Cole Beasley, is like, I didn't get to play last week. I need more reps or whatever. Guys shouldn't be thinking that way. Guys should be going out and trying to get the ultimate goal, which I think is to try to put a 40-plus on the Jets and the Falcons on the last two ball games, 40-plus points, and get those guys out of there and get some rest to make a run at the playoffs. So I think Sean McDermott has been great about, you know, when a situation like this has come about. And, hey, look. The players have to put up on themselves. It's all about the team and not the individual. When you're this far down deep in the season, you have to worry about, you know, what's best for the team. And I think Cole Beasley was seeing Isaiah McKenzie, you know, doing his thing in the slot and really having, I mean, a career game last week against the Patriots. Hey, if he's a hot hand right now, let him go. Let Isaiah McKenzie go and let him do his things and let Cole Beasley, you know, come in and sub for him. But I'm sure – Cole is probably going to be the starter again come against the Falcons.
That's, I mean, as easy as it is for us to say, it's kind of hard for a coach to put that into practice. You know that Cole Beasley is a prideful player. Just about everybody is at this level. But at the same time, Coach McDermott has always said, Thurm, you have to earn the right to win. You have to earn the right to get playing time. The last two times they've put McKenzie in a starting role, he's shown out. So you can't ignore that, right, and sit him back down just because these other guys – he's got to get on the field, right?
Yeah, I mean, having a career year in the biggest game of the year in the Buffalo Bills this year, he has to be out on the football field. I mean, he's just another weapon that they have out on the football field, and I think Sean McDermott will stick to his word. I think he has earned the right to get more playing time. Now, I don't know if that's going to be 50-50 or 75-25, but I guarantee you that Isaiah McKenzie will be back on that football field a lot more than he has in the past, 13 or 14 games. I mean, he's earned the right to go out there and do well, and you know what? Maybe it's some of the things that he might be doing on special teams. I have no idea. But I think the guy, when he's on the football field, he's electric. He makes plays all over the football field. And so, obviously, you know, at the end of the season and going to the playoffs, he might have a bigger role than a lot of people think he might have.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is that when you start talking about comparing these guys, we're comparing Isaiah McKenzie to Cole Beasley, and we're also comparing Gabriel Davis to Emmanuel Sanders. Gabe Davis and Emmanuel Sanders seem more closely related in their skill set than do McKenzie and Beasley.
Yes.
Beasley is a guy who's open. He makes incredibly difficult catches.
He knows leverage.
He knows leverage. He gets open to Josh. And Josh proved last week he trusts both those guys. But McKenzie is a guy who you get the feeling he can snap off the big play from your own end. He's going to go the difference, and he gives you that play – the Tyreek Hill kind of play where if you miss a tackle on him, there's going to be six guys chasing him and they may run him out of bounds, but it's going to be 50 yards down the field or he's going to get a touchdown. That's something McKenzie gives you that Beasley doesn't. But on the other side, Beasley gives you quicker separation, better hands, whatever. How do you mix all that together and say, listen, we got to win this game. This game.
Yeah. The Atlanta Falcons is the team that we got to beat right now. And how do you go about determining who gets more playing time? I have no idea. I think you will see a little bit more of the jet sweep that we've been talking about that we saw so well executed against the New England Patriots. You know what? Hey, if you go back and look at all the receptions that McKenzie had, I mean, these were some tough catches. Obviously, being a small guy who was very physical, I can't even remember who number 41 was for the Patriots, but I guarantee he's having nightmares right now. And I guarantee he probably wished that Cole Beasley was in the game instead of Isaiah McKenzie. But Now with the jet sweep and all that stuff, you have to put him in a game plan. You have to put him in a game plan and get him the football as many times as you possibly can. I know it won't be that way this coming week because, hey, look, I look for Stephon Diggs. I look for these guys to be out of the game by the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I get it. Let me throw one more thing at you on this, Thurm, because the Bills are playing a Falcons team that is last in the league in sacks, and they are like 28th in pressures, quarterback pressures. They're not even getting there to hurry throws. Would you be opposed to putting Beasley and McKenzie double slot and then stick Knox out wide if you had a tight end on the field, or Davis, depending on what you want to do there? Why couldn't you just go double slot, put them both on the field?
You're not facing a big pass rush team.
You know what I mean? So right. I'm not saying the whole game, but you could have a package of plays like that.
Yeah, I think if you look at that stat, what you just said, I think Dable is looking at that. I think the offensive coaches are looking at that right now. And I've said it the last couple of weeks now. I mean, if you give Josh Allen enough time and you look at those stats that you just read to me, the guy should probably have over 400 yards by third quarter. I mean, if you give him time to throw, and obviously these wide receivers are getting open and defensive backs for the Atlanta Falcons are not covering anybody. They're not getting any pass rush. And I think Josh is one of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League. He will eat them alive. And so, hey, look, I know you don't want to look forward. You don't want to look past the Atlanta Falcons because we've seen some crazy things happening in the National Football League this year. But, I think this team is focused. I think that the win over the Patriots last week will carry on for the next two games and all the way into the playoffs. I think these guys' confidence are so sky high right now that they're going to be a problem once they get into the playoffs.
How much benefit is there for the Bills? Because you know what it's like. If you can remember, you go back and you get an idea of what you're looking at in your opponent. When you get to the playoffs, you got a whole season to look at. You know kind of exactly who they are and what they do really well and who their really good players are. How much benefit is there for a team like Buffalo, who has Atlanta, who's struggling coming in, and then the Jets, who's struggling coming in, two straight home games? Can they get some benefit from saying, okay, let's put it on ourselves to beat these guys a little bit left-handed? Put, like Brownie said, put double slot four wides out there. We'll run some other stuff that we're probably not going to run in the playoffs we haven't run yet. And we'll get some benefit in the playoffs because those teams are going to have to prepare for stuff that we're probably not going to run against them anyway. But they got to look at it and say, wow, they were killing that team with four wide. We got to get ready for that. What benefit is there towards lining it up like that as you end the season?
Well, I think it's some benefit. Obviously, you get the defenses that you're going to be facing in the playoffs. You might get a little bit more film study from them. But I think it's a big benefit that you can throw out there anything. Hey, you know what? And just looking at the overall picture here, I don't know where Atlanta or the Jets are in rush defense, but this could be an opportunity for Zach Moss and Devin Singletary. You know, and Josh might not have to throw the ball 40 or 50 times these last two football games. So, you know what? It's an opportunity for a lot of things for Brian Dable to talk about, to think about what he's going to do. It might not show his hand for the playoffs, but there's some things that you can work on that might not have worked early in the season for you that you can work on right now with the Atlanta Falcons and New York Jets the last two ball games.
Yeah, Jets are 30th in the league against the run. Falcons are 22nd, so neither are terribly good. And, you know, the last time the Bills faced – you know, a lower third of the league run defense was Carolina, and that's when Singletary had a season-high 86 yards. So,
I just don't want it to be Brownie and Tasker. I just don't want it to be like one of those games where I think, you know, when you think about these last two ball games, the first thing that comes to my mind is the Jacksonville Jaguars. Even though that was a road game, they're playing these last two games at home. You don't want that lull. You don't want that. You want to be out and, you know, they should have their best practices coming up these next couple of weeks, man, really, to get zoned in, to get better prepared going into the playoff, knowing what's at stake. So I see this football team really coming out in these last two football games. Like I said, they should put 35 or more points on both of these football teams in the last in the last two games and rest their starters in the fourth quarter.
See, now it's interesting that you're thinking of that, because a few minutes ago you were saying how you think they've kind of captured something here in these last couple of games, the way they've played, the way they've put their opponents away. They finally stacked wins for the first time in the last 2 months. But that's still sitting in the back of your mind as, you know, an onlooker and a fan of this team. And it's interesting you say that, because Steve and I were just talking about that, Thurman. What we were saying was, you can make this argument. The best games they've played this year, start to finish, you know, 60-minute ball games, the best performances they've had. Kansas City, where they had an axe to grind from last year's AFC title game. The Tennessee game, even though it didn't end the way they wanted, that's probably one of their better performances, start to finish. You know, they put 27 on the board, and they're a fourth down sneak from winning. They had an axe to grind in that one after the game got rescheduled 17 times, and they lost last year. And then you had the game last week against the Patriots, where they had an axe to grind because of the way the last game ended here in the windstorm. So it's fair for somebody like you looking at this team saying, well, they had extra motivation for those three games where they played their best from start to finish, 60-minute games. Are they going to be able to ramp it up for the hapless Atlanta Falcons and the sorry New York Jets the last 2 weeks?
I think so. I think the offense will play well, but I think the defense will play even better. I think these guys are really kind of rounding in the form. At the end of the year, they're getting healthy again. I would like to see a little bit more of the pass rush come to light in the last couple of games against Atlanta and the Jets. I think if you can get some sacks in there, you know what? You know, that'll give them guys a little bit more confidence. So I think what Starr's coming back this week, right?
Yep.
Correct. So, you know, they're getting healthy at the right time. It all boils down to Sean McDermott. I don't think him and Leslie Frazier and the quality coaches that we have on this football team, I guarantee you, they're going into that meeting every single day right now telling those guys, hey, look, guys, yes, they are the Atlanta Falcons, but this is a National Football League. They're going to come out. These guys are playing for their jobs in these last couple of games on these football teams, and we cannot have a letdown. I guarantee you Coach McDermott and the rest of the coaches are putting this in these guys' head that we cannot have a lapse in these last two games.
If you're looking at, you know, you see Josh Allen, and I was asking this about Brown. You see, you know, Aaron Rodgers get to the championship game, the championship game, the championship game. He never gets back to the Super Bowl after getting there the one time. And you see other teams.
Right.
What facet of this team do you feel like gives the Bills a chance maybe to be the championship team they dream of? I know, obviously, they got the quarterback. Josh is playing at MVP level. He can carry him on his back. But I think when you get to that level, you got to have something else that helps you get over the hump. You got to have something else that can beat another team. What do you think that's going to be for this team?
I think it's going to be I think it may be two things. I think it could be the defense getting some more turnovers, and I do think the offensive line playing like they played against New England. I think, and I've said it over and over again, that if this offensive line gives – Josh Allen enough time in the pocket, he can pick you apart. So even back to when we were playing, Steve, it was always predicated on our offensive line of what they do and how they do it throughout the entire football game. And the thing about that is that these guys were, Kent and all the rest of those guys were really good at pass blocking and run blocking. But in today's game and to Bill's offense right now with Josh Allen, the pass blocking is the most important. I think now you can see some of the patterns that Stephon Diggs is starting to run more now, more downfield stuff. Isaiah McKenzie, more downfield stuff. You're starting to see that. And the one thing that I really liked about this last game is that when have we seen Josh Allen use the check down so many times to bring up second down and two or second down and three? Using a check down and having an opportunity to get the ball to Devin Singletary and get 6 or 7 yards, that opens it up on the backside so that these linebackers can't drop as deep as they normally could. And that gives the opportunity for Sanders and Knox and Diggs and all those guys to get behind the linebacker. So I really do think it's the defense getting a little bit more turnovers and the offensive line doing an excellent job of giving Josh Allen a little bit more time.
Last one for me, Thurm. A guy that's kind of emerged the last couple of weeks on defense is F.A. Obada. I mean, two sacks against Carolina. Yes, he has the roughing the passer penalty in the New England game, but he's getting pressure. He's moving the quarterback off his spot. It looks like they may have found a guy that they can rely on coming off the edge, which I think is pretty important here since some of the rookies have kind of fallen off in their effectiveness and productivity these last few games. So what do you think F.A. Obada can be here down the stretch and going into the postseason?
Hey, I tell you what, if he gives us an effort like he did against the Patriots, against the Falcons and the Jets and whoever we play in the playoffs, I guarantee you that frees up a lot more other guys to be one-on-one with offensive linemen. And, hey, look, I know that we haven't got the pass rush that that we want so dearly. You know, we want, you know, we always talked about Bruce Smith in that situation. But, hey, look, I think all these guys have to come together and be like, you know what, guys? We have to put a little bit more effort into getting to the pass rush. And, hey, look, once you open up the outside, these inside guys should free up a little bit more. I expect Ed Oliver to continue to get better and better at the end of the game, at the end of the season against Atlanta and the Jets and continue into the playoffs. I don't think we've talked about him enough. He's been playing really solid football pretty much the second half of the season, and that's good to see.
Thurm, congratulations on the 30th anniversary of your MVP, even though neither one of us remembered it.
Hey, and you tomorrow, my dear friend, I'm looking for you to be on that final ballot.
Oh, all right.
Well, yeah, finalist we'll list see. Comes I'm out at 5 p.m. tonight.
We've been here before, bro.
Oh, my God. Would you stop saying that?
I know.
Would you stop saying that?
You got to speak it into existence.
I can't get myself all wrapped up in that because, you know, I mean, yeah.
You don't want to get your hopes
up? I'll just wait.
All right. Well, 5 p.m. is the time.
If I make the final list, I'll talk smack then, right?
There you go. That's all I wanted to hear.
Yeah, okay.
I wait to see that. Thanks for the time, Thurm. We'll catch up with you next week. Happy New Year.
All right. See ya.
All right. That's Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Famer, joining us here on One Bills Live, and he's referencing the fact that the Pro Football Hall of Fame list of 15 modern era finalists to be considered for induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame will be released at 5 p.m. this afternoon. Steve, as we know, is one of a handful of Bills on the semifinalist list. I believe Cornelius Bennett and maybe one other former Bill is on that list. And we'll see as the list gets whittled down to 15 modern era finalists, which will be lumped in with three veterans candidates for selection as well for the induction class of 2022. So fingers and toes crossed, everybody out there. I know that the fans have voted in droves for Steve.
Yeah, that was nice.
You had the most Pro Football Hall of Fame fan votes of any of the semifinalist candidates. How about that?
Thanks.
I think it's
Bills.
Over 65,000.
Bills Mafia coming through big time.
Coming out in droves for Steve.
Very
that was cool. But we will take a break here. When we come back, we'll get to more of your phone calls as we want to find out from you your best solution for the log jam at wide receiver and how you would divvy out playing time now that all the players are off the COVID reserve list and appear to be healthy for this weekend's game against Atlanta. Give us a call, 803-0550, or on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. We'll be back in a second. Mafia, you can win a trip to the Super Bowl on us. Just download the official mobile app of the Buffalo Bills, create a profile, fill out the entry form. Already have a profile? Just fill out the form in your app. One lucky fan will win two tickets to the Super Bowl in L.A., including flights and hotel. Don't miss out on this once-in-a-lifetime experience. Talking with you today about the Bills logjam at wide receiver. Everybody off the COVID list. Seemingly everybody healthy going into Sunday's game against the Falcons. You got a red-hot Isaiah McKenzie, an ultra-productive Gabriel Davis the last three games that he's played with four touchdowns. And you got a healthy Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley. What are you doing there? Let us know if you're the head coach this week. How are you divvying up the wide receiver snaps? We go to the phones. And we lead off here with Joe in Tonawanda. Joe, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, Thanks, Chris. You killed everything I was going to say.
Oh, sorry. But,
I was going to ask, we could have McKenzie and Beasley play at the same time with Diggs, Davis, and Knox. We could actually do that, right? But hold on. Now I got the bad stuff. I believe we were very fortunate that game because it seemed like the refs were kind of on our side with the calls, but that Jerry Hughes, the most experienced guy, 15 years, throws the guy out of bounds, and the Obata late hit, that would have killed us against a high-scoring playoff team. Can you bring up the penalties and who had the least?
You mean in the game on Sunday? I think he means in the game on Sunday. Yeah, I can pull it up.
The Bills had more penalties than the Patriots did. They had 5 for 60. The Patriots had 3 for something. Something.
They didn't call many. I'll double check it.
Yeah, get it back, and I'll get the game book and look at it real quick. But that's the and I heard that. You hear that from Patriot fans as well. I don't know that that makes the difference in that game. I don't believe it does.
Yeah, they were all up in arms about the push late hit out of bounds on Mac Jones.
Bills 5 for 45, Patriots 3 for 30.
Yeah,
and I think the penalty out of bounds that where he got him.
Jerry's trying to pull him back up.
He did, but he also gave him a little forward. I mean,
shouldn't even be there.
Yeah, you could see that. You could see that being called on. If that happened to Josh Allen,
we'd be screaming bloody.
We'd be
murder.
Screaming about it. Some of the other penalties, the roughing the passer on Obata, they called.
Yeah, helmet to helmet.
That was helmet to helmet. That's
why they called.
Yeah, that's why they called. He was too high. I don't think the roughing the passer call would have been a game changer. Certainly, it didn't put Mac Jones in any danger.
Yeah.
All right. So we got a call. Listen, you're going to have a hard time selling us getting a call. Bills getting a call. In any game after what they've been through this year with the Tampa Bay game and all of that. So, that's one. They called the Obata penalty. So we got that. Everything else, right. I don't know what you're – yeah. So that was not a game changer for me.
Yeah, and while they could argue yardage all they want, they were still down in the game at that point in time. And while the yardage difference – was due in part to the flag pickup on Jerry Hughes. They also had an instance in that game where, Trent Brown is mouthing off after a play and gets flagged for taunting and wipes out a 15, 20-yard play off the board for them. So you want to talk about lack of discipline, that was New England uncharacteristically doing that as well. Trent Brown got flagged for taunting. And so did David Andrews. Remember, David Andrews got in the face of one of the defensive players for the Bills.
Yeah, he got
started
taunting.
Yapping.
Right.
He got flagged.
And that was.
But Trent Brown got knocked too. He got hit for one also.
Who did?
Trent Brown. It was after the play. What the heck was that? It was at midfield.
It was after the. It was after the roughing call. No, it was. It was Matt Milano.
Yeah.
Came up and hit and got a flag for roughing the passer.
And then they
got
offset because Trent Brown.
Because then Trent Brown came in and,
started mouthing off at him.
I can't remember what it was. It was a series of penalties that were personal. Matt Milano got a roughing the pass or an unnecessary roughness penalty because he hit the quarterback when he slid. And their offensive lineman came in and leaned in on Matt Milano. So they both got another penalty. Yeah. I can't remember exactly how they played that out, but I think they got the gain on the play, and the post play penalties offset each other. Weirdest thing ever.
Yeah, but my point there is, Trent Brown gets unsportsmanlike conduct on a 2nd and 3 play. That's what it says here that I'm looking at it right now. So that's the play after the flag got picked up. On Jerry. So the flag gets picked up on Jerry.
Yeah.
Next play, Trent Brown, unsportsmanlike conduct because he's dropping F-bombs right in front of the ref and gets killed on that. So
that wasn't the next play. It was the same play. It was between the plays.
Oh, well, it listed it here as 2nd and 3. In any event, the Bills got called for an offensive pass interference. Remember, Emmanuel Sanders got flagged for that. So,
right.
I mean, you could say the refs were on the Bills' side, in your opinion, the way you saw it, but there's a couple different ways to look at that. Let's go to David in South Plain. David, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yes, I agree. We have to, like Thurman Thomas says, as a team, we have to rely on our coaches, and whatever decision they make on who starts, you cure on that player and be ready when they call your number out. And just to remind you, when Bill Belichick was on roughing the passer, and he was on the sidelines in the field, actually, he should have got a call on that too. That's my feeling about the whole situation. And thank you, and good luck, Steve.
Hey, thanks. Bill Belichick should have got a call, a penalty on him when
he thought he was on the field arguing and whatever. They'd never throw the flag on that unless the guy's out past the numbers.
The
they're
amazing
not throwing any
part about it is
bench flag
at his most passionate and out of control self on the sidelines. He's not even in the – he is still number 32 at being the most demonstrative head coach. He is like a flat line. Constantly.
Stone face.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. That's why it was so delicious when he threw the phone last year.
Yeah.
You just never see that guy.
He wasn't happy about the flag getting picked up on Jerry. He's like, what is that? What are you picking it up? Why?
Why are you picking it up? And now you're giving us a penalty. Like, he had – I mean, I could see that. But even then, he was like, what? Now – what? He's like, I just want to know what's – you could read his lips. I just want to know what's going on. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know that you're going to throw a penalty on that. Most of what gets a penalty thrown on in those situations would make your grandmother blush. But, you know, that didn't seem to be it. No. So I don't know if I guess I disagree with you, Dave, about Belichick deserving a penalty there.
We have players addressing the media now that practice is over for the day. Up addressing the media is Micah Hyde. So we go now to the practice field where we hear from Micah addressing the media via Zoom.
We saw just about an hour ago, I believe it was Cody and Cam Lewis come off the COVID list. And it looks like this will be the first time that you guys do not have any active players on the list since early November. And I'm just curious, what have these last couple months been like? But also at the same time, how do you make sure that as a team, you continue to stay cautious with what's going on around the league?
Oh, man, it's been chaos. It's been chaos in the sense that you never know what to expect. We learned a lot last year as all this stuff was going on and you know, guys were in and out because of COVID and all that. So, this year, just the next man in mentality like the boys had and, guys have been stepping up and you never really know what to expect. So all you can do is just, put your head down and keep working.
All right, and this is a very different question, but we talked to Jordan a little bit about Kyle Pitts yesterday, and obviously he seems to be having a very strong year, especially, considering he's a rookie. So as a team who have played a lot of really top-end tight ends this year, I guess what is the – I don't want to say the secret, but what is, like, the game plan or the mindset when dealing with a tight end that does have some just really special traits?
Well, I think tight ends in general are freaks of nature, guys that can just obviously block and help in the run game. But then the pass game, they're able to, create mismatches on linebackers, safeties. You put a corner on them, they're too big for them. So, tight ends in general in today's NFL, are tough to guard. So you got a guy, a rookie coming in that's he's a beast. He's big. He can go up and get the ball. He can do it all. So it's going to be a tough challenge for us. He's a young guy that's getting better each and every game.
Cool. Thanks, Micah. Happy New Year.
Sure. Happy New Year.
What's up, Micah? Good to see you.
You too, man.
So, such a bummer on Sunday. It was a good day for you guys, but obviously Ike, your Iowa brother going down.
Yeah.
What was
yeah.
that like for you guys? Because he's to me, Ike's one of those guys that really epitomizes, you guys, the story of how he's kind of worked for everything he's earned and yeah. seeing it go down. What was that like for you guys?
It's sad. It's sad. Just not even talking about football. Ike as a person is one of the best human beings I've ever met. And I can say that with confidence. Like, Ike is my boy. Like, I walk in the locker room or I walk in cafeteria or whatever, and I see Ike. It's just an automatic smile, no matter if I'm having a bad day or not. Like, he's just a good dude. He's a good dude, and I'm a little biased because he's an Iowa guy. You know, just down to earth, humble, always willing to work. I guess that is an Iowa guy type thing. But, it was sad to see him, you know, go down, talk to him the day after. Was there for him, just told him anything you need, we're here for you. And, beautiful family. And I know Ike's going to, you know, he's going to take this offseason to get better and bounce back next year.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the Falcons, Cordarrelle Patterson, you talked a lot about him already this week. Unbelievable season, so much danger as a runner, mm-hmm. as a receiver. What does he present in terms of a challenge you guys prepare for him, watching him on film?
Beast. He's a beast. We came in together in 2013. I was in Green Bay. He was in Minnesota. So I've had a lot of games against him. I think our first game we played against each other, he took the opening kickoff back 109 yards. And I was the only person that I had an opportunity to tackle him. And I went to go tackle him low, and I just bounced right off of him. I returned the favor by returning the punt, but that's beside the point. It's just one of those guys that anytime the ball is in his hands, he's hard to bring down. You really have to gang tackle him, and solo tackling him is really not an option. Because he's electric when the ball's in his hand, and it's something that you have to always know where he's at. And, you know, you see what they're doing with him. They put him in the backfield. They put him, they run screens to him. They put him out wide. He's running routes. They put him, mismatch opportunities against linebackers. So they're doing a good job moving around, and just another challenge for us this week.
Thanks, man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, buddy.
Hey, Micah. Question for you. When Trey went down about a month ago, you can't replace him, that you guys all talked about that sort of thing. How do you feel like this secondary has responded over the last month in terms of not having him and how you've kind of filled that void?
Oh, I think that we all just understood that, what type of player Tre'Davious is. And, he's like you just mentioned, he's irreplaceable. You can't plug somebody in that's going to do what he does and what he's been doing, in the league for a long time. So, I guess we understood that. We all had to elevate our game individually to be able to, bring this secondary and bring this defense to where we want to go. And so, I can honestly say the guys that have stepped in and some of the guys that you don't even see, that out here practicing every single day that are putting in the work, our group, our secondary group is honestly one of a kind. I love the guys that we have and whether if it's D-Jack or, Cam stepping in on special teams or, Levi making some big plays, Saran coming in. It's just guy after guy after guy is coming in trying to compete, and that's all we can ask.
All right, that's Micah Hyde addressing the media here after practice. We have to take a break, and when we come back, we will close things up here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. How should the Bills divvy up the wide receiver snaps with everybody healthy and ready to roll here for these final 2 weeks? We go to the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And J-Mad says, they need to find a way to get Davis and McKenzie more involved. Maybe run sets with Beasley and McKenzie both in the slots from time to time. And at this point, I would try to get Davis more involved than Sanders, who has disappeared the last few weeks. Dean says, go five wide. Three receivers bunch and two inside and out on the other side. Diggs, McKenzie, Beasley, Sanders, Davis in the bunch. Diggs and McKenzie, and then Beasley, Sanders, and Davis in the bunch. Knox added any time they're 30 yards from the end zone. They can't cover them all if the line can play as well as they did against New England. And as I mentioned, Steve, this is not a good pass rushing unit for Atlanta.
That gives them a chance, and you've got to use all that to your advantage because you will get some benefit down the road because teams have got to prepare for these personnel sets and those formations and personnel combinations. So if it works, great. but it's all about winning this game by hook or crook. You got to win the game, and then you can do all this other stuff.
Do whatever you want to do, but win the game. Make sure you win the game first and foremost. Steve and I back tomorrow. Big Friday show, Fan Friday mailbag. Greg Cosell, we'll see you at 1:00.